Welcome to the Powell House Press Podcast. Today, we have the first chapter of Josh's memoir, Father and Son. We hope you enjoy this reading and follow me here on Substack or on Medium at JDPowell65. Enjoy the podcast.
In high school, I skipped so many classes in the 11th grade, I received a 6 in social studies. My parents thought it was a typo. Nope. That was my grade. As they flew off the handle, made themselves a drink, and went from yelling at me to muttering that I would be a ditch digger between sips of their cocktails, I tried to explain that all would be okay. In New York State at the time, in Regents classes at the end of the year, I could take the Regent exam that could be used as my final grade. I bought one of Barron's Red study books, a primer for the test, and read it twice. I did the same for biology. My grades disappointed me. I got a 97 in social studies and a 99 in biology. Later in life, as a liberal arts major who wanted to attend medical school, the advanced chemistry classes were challenging for me, but I aced every test. By then, I had given up on the need to understand a particular concept. I just read the textbook, and the answers would come as if I were looking for a specific mug in a cupboard. The point is that I have an excellent recall. Mine is not a photographic memory, not total recall, like the people who can recall where they were on a specific date 20 years ago. No, not like that. For me, memory is like accessing small video clips. I can still remember taking a bath when I was 2. When I was 4, I remember the smell of sun-warmed water in large, galvanized tubs and chasing the Haflinger ponies in the weedy fields across the road from our country house. But my memory has drawbacks. I always remember slights. Every fight, heartbreak, and lousy deed, whether at my hands or another's, creates moments that I can only describe as a prison of shame, guilt, or anger. My father's memories are framed in the perspective of a little boy who profoundly sensed that he was different. Like any child, I saw his abuse through the lens of me being the bad actor, not him. His heartfelt apologies after an incident or his unexpected gentle kindness made it more confusing. These memories of my father, recorded in the gray matter of my boyhood brain, haunted me after he died and continued to do so as I grew up and into my adulthood. Did I try to ignore the confusion of my childhood? In every way possible. Whether it was pointless relationships, drinking, runaway ambition, or competition, I tried everything, but it was always there. The profound disconnect between the narrative that my mother sowed after my father died. He was a great, loving father, and talented, successful portrait painter, and my private cinema curated with the sensibilities of a boy's battered emotions and bizarre experiences. My father's memories are framed in the perspective of a little boy who profoundly sensed that he was different. It was 1996. I was 31 when I found out the truth about the murders, the sensational press coverage, the subsequent cover-ups, the conspiracy and complicity of not only my mother but of politicians and powerful family friends, the little movies in my head spliced themselves together. I was sitting in the Pierre Hotel restaurant. A college friend had invited me for dinner. A close friend. He was obsessed with places like this, fancy waterholes that the old guard would seek out. The likes of Bunny Mellon and Lee Radziwill, the grand dames of New York. He always thought of my family as one of these well-worn old families who once had money, but with gone, we still had a specific sensibility. Part of that was genuine. We had lovely homes, though they were smaller. We still ate from old family silver. The art on the walls was valuable, and the silk carpets, once valuable, were worn. And like many families, there was the shameful sale of jewelry on the down low to ease financial pressure. But the veneer of the Powell family remained intact. That is until I started to dig. Like any child, I saw his abuse through the lens of me being the bad actor, not him. His heartfelt apologies after an incident or his unexpected gentle kindness made it more confusing. Against the banquet, I started to tell Frank about what I had learned. The first murder in the 1940s, the one with the hammer that happened long before I was born in 1965. He scoffed at me. "Please," he said dismissively, taking a sip of his Chardonnay, "as if." When I heard the story come out of my mouth, it seemed preposterous. To my right, on the seat of the curved banquette, was a large yellow envelope. I picked it up and handed it across the table. It contained copies of newspaper articles from the 1940s. "Look for yourself," I said. Frank pulled out the thick bunch of papers. "What am I looking at?" he asked. "It's funny how the obvious escapes us," I thought. Or maybe it was because we were now in the age of cable TV and the internet. "Look about the masthead," I said, directing him to where the Hearst family had placed all the big news. "Extra, extra. Powell sought on the Pacific coast in Boston Hammer murder." Frank looked up at me. His eyes were wide. "Holy shit," he said, and then grabbed his wine and downed it in a single chug. Then, after a long moment, "You said murders, plural." He waved to the waiter and pointed to his empty wine glass. This was unlike him. He was more of the wait till someone came over to the table, and then he'd ask for another drink. "After I tell you about Jacob Cohn," I said, referring to the 1940s Boston murder, "I will tell you about Nancy Campbell." "Jesus," he said. "Did your mother know?" he asked. "Yeah, she knew," I said. "How the fuck did you not know?" he whispered. "Indeed."